You have your Bibles, please turn in your Bibles to 1 John chapter 3. Also the book of Malachi, which is the very last book in the Old Testament. And the book of Luke, chapter 1. Just to get you parked there, ready to roll when we get there. 1 John chapter 3, Malachi chapter 4, and Luke chapter 1. Well, it's been a wild start to the week last week, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. Of course, that's not to downplay the immediate effects of the torrential rain that we had Monday. It does make you wonder, though, if Louisiana has made their amends with God, now making Oklahoma the new punching bag. I mean, in the past 6 months, we've had a Christmas blizzard, we've had tornadoes during snowstorms, we've had our ordinary run-of-the-mill tornadoes, we've had hailstorms of biblical proportions. A foot of rain in one morning, and now I'm hearing the plague of grasshoppers may take the place of locusts. I don't know about you, but being a firstborn son, I'm kind of getting a little nervous. So it makes you wonder sometimes. Today is Father's Day, and in case you weren't aware, most fathers are known by their practical thinking. Even when they start out as a young child, their practical thinking begins to blossom. Kind of like the dad who took his took a six-year-old boy fishing with him. One day they put out the line, and then they went back up to the cabin. And then about an hour later, they went back down to check their fishing line and to see if they caught anything. And sure enough, they pulled in the line, and several fish were on the line. The boy said, "I knew there would be, Daddy." And the father said, "Well, how did you know?" And then the little boy said, "Well, because I prayed about it." So they baited the hooks and put them back in the water and then went to the cabin back up there for supper. And afterward, after supper, they went back down to the river again, and there were fish on the line. And the boy said, "I knew it." And the father said, "How?" And the boy said, "I prayed again." So they put their lines back in the water, and they went back up to the cabin. Before bedtime, they thought they'd just check one last time, so they went back down to the river. But this time, when they pulled up their lines, there weren't any fish on the line. And the child said, "I knew there wouldn't be." And the father asked, "Well, how did you know?" And the boy said, "Well, because I didn't pray this time." And the father asked, "Well, why didn't you pray?" And the boy said, "Because I remember we forgot to bait the hooks." You know, so the practical thinking even starts from little age up. So today, on Father's Day, if most men are practical in their thinking, it would be interesting to find out what they think about regarding God in regards to their life. I mean, what comes to mind when you think of God as the most important thing about you? Whatever it is, whatever you think about, when you think about God as the most important thing about you, is important because you're made to respond to the Creator. And so, you're going to respond throughout your life to God, whether you really consciously think about it or not. Because you're made by Him and made for Him. And there's something in you that'll never forget that. And will always reach out to the one that made you by Him and for Him. And so whatever you think of, whatever your concept is, whether shaped by experience or shaped by church or some pastor or your parents or somebody that you're going to spend, that's been in your life that's made a profound influence on you, whatever is shaping your idea about God is paramount, because that's what you're going to spend your whole life responding to. And so since we're responders, God knew how important it was that He be a revealer to you and I. And so He stepped in time and space and revealed Himself to us so we wouldn't spend our whole lives responding to the wrong idea of God and who He was. And that would be a tragedy if He did that, and He knows it. And so He wanted to make sure that you didn't spend your whole entire life responding to some crazy idea of who God was, but that you really knew who He was, and so you could respond to Him as He is. And the most clear way that He revealed Himself to you, to the responding hearts of you and me, is as a perfect Father. He chose to enter a relationship with us like a father and son, like a father and daughter. And what Christ, who is the pinnacle of the revelation of God, taught us most is that God is the perfect Father. I mean, Jesus instructs us even in His Word. He says, when you pray, pray like this, Our Father who art in heaven. And Jesus also said to His other disciples and people around Him at that day, He said, if you've seen Me, you've seen the Father. And so what is he was amplifying, what He's clarifying, lifting up for us, is that God is the Father, and that's something all of us can understand, especially on a day like today, Father's Day. But what really links us together here today is that all of us have a common thirst. And you know what that thirst is for? It's for a Father's blessing. Now, you may not have said that this week. You probably didn't wake up last Wednesday thinking, well, it's the middle of the week and I really need my Father's blessing. You probably didn't say that, but I promise you that stirring deep inside of you, underneath all those layers of you, whether one layer down or repressed 1,000 layers down, is a desire and a longing for something that no one can give you on this entire planet. And that's a Father's blessing. You ask, well, what is a Father's blessing? Well, I think it's at least four things. It's probably 44. I'm no psychologist, I'm no psychiatrist, I'm not going to pretend to be that here today, but I know there are at least four things involved in a Father's blessing that you're thirsting for and longing for in your life. And the first one is just to be loved by your dad. Everybody in this building wants to be loved by a daddy. And I don't mean just that you knew you were loved. You want to hear that you're loved. You want the words to come out of His mouth that says, I love you. You want to hear it often? You don't want to hear it once. You don't want to hear it per decade. You don't want to hear it on monumental occasions. You want to hear it consistently. You want to hear it regularly, even when you're supposed to, and even when you're not supposed to hear it said about you, in the good times and the bad times. You want some surprise occurrences. You want some to come in the mail. You want some to come in email. You want some to come on the text message by a phone, so we got to get Dad a cell phone for this to happen. Some to come out of the blue. Some to come right down the center lane. We want to hear our dad say, I love you. We really, really want to hear that. And we want him to prove it. We don't just want talk. We want actions to back that up. The second part of a father's blessing is that we want the acceptance and approval of our dads. I mean, you can get promoted to the top of your company, but that doesn't really satisfy the thirst from your dad saying, hey, I really think that you're pretty amazing. Now, acceptance and approval I'm speaking about here doesn't mean a blanket permission to do something or anything anytime they want. It's not a father saying, hey, whatever you want to do and however you want to do it and whatever you think is best, just go for it. Nobody really wants that. What all we want is our Father to say, I understand you, I realize that you're you, and you're not your brother, you're not your sister, you're not your neighbor, you're you. You're unique, you're different, and I like that about you. And you're on a path, it's a different path, but it's your path, and I approve of you being on that path in life. I like that and accept you. You also want the third part of our Father's blessing, and that is the active participation of your dad in your world. You want Dad to put down the cell phone. You want Dad to put down the newspaper, to show up and to be present. Fully present, not like I'm there, but I'm on the email the whole time listening to you. Or I'll come around, but I've only got a 15-minute window for all this business, and then I'm going to have to kind of fade away and disappear again. You want your dad to be in the moment. It's part of a blessing. Yes, I love you. I'll tell you I love you. Yes, I approve and I accept of you. But you also want him to be around. And because he can tell you all day long that But if he's not fully present, you don't really believe it. And lastly, you want the spoken belief from your dad. And you need it. You need him to be the one that says, hey, I believe in you, and this is what I can believe that can happen in your life. I believe you can do anything you can set your mind to. I believe you're going to succeed and not fail. I have confidence in you. I'm your biggest fan. I believe there's nothing you can accomplish, you can't accomplish in your life, because you're an amazing person and God has done a phenomenal thing in your life. You're going to tear this world apart and I can't wait to see it. We want to hear that. We want that spoken belief into who we are. And here's the thing. Maybe you're ready to step up to the plate this morning and say, uh-huh, exactly. Or maybe you're just the kind that just kind of pushed away about 4 or 5 feet and crossed your arms and said, well, I don't need any of that. I don't need to hear him, see him, know him. I don't need it. Oh, yes, you do. And stirring beneath inside you, underneath all that stuff, is a longing for a Father's blessing. And it's common for all of us in this place today, and God knows that. Because God understands our hearts, and He knows how we're wired. Because here's what happens. Jesus comes along, and Jesus says to us, hey, great news, I'm revealing God the Father. Here's the Father. And some of you go right on to that, because I've got a great dad. And if God's like that, that's a big plus. Wow. Some of you go like, ooh, time out there. If God's a father, and your mind starts rolling about what a father means, and you're like, I don't want anything to do with God who's a father. And what it does is it breaks apart your ability to respond well to Him and understand who you are in Him. And you see, it's becoming pretty clear. Is it not a cultural coincidence or tragedy that fatherhood is in such big dilemma today? As a matter of fact, this generation has been labeled the fatherless generation because so many grandparents are raising their grandchildren instead of the parents raising them. I mean, it's not the kind of like, oh, I see how that happened now, that most kids, half the kids, don't live in the house with their dad. That's kind of just the way culture's evolved today. You have to step back and be more realistic than that. Because if God's heart is being revealed as a father, and you're an enemy who wants to destroy people's relationship with God, then what do you have to do? You have to destroy fatherhood. And we live in a culture where fatherhood is under attack every second of the day. Where kids are being brought up all over the city, all over the state, all over this world, and they're not living in the presence of the one who can give them a blessing that they're so thirsty for. And God has a lot of work to do here. And that's why I'm so excited that He repairs and He restores. And that's why I'm so excited that the gospel is more powerful than everything. For look in 1 John chapter 3 in your Bibles. In 1 John chapter 3, we see here that Jesus does the work. And I want you to see the result. Look what happens to us through the work of Christ in 1 John, this little epistle at the end of the New Testament. There's a statement in here that's our main point today. Because some of the things that you're going to hear in the next few minutes are going to be kind of difficult. And they're going to make you a little uncomfortable. A few of you. They make me a little uncomfortable. Come on, church isn't about me standing up here behind this stand with the Bible in my hand talking about some great platitude in life. At some point, the gospel has got to be real. And it is. At some point, the church has got to be real. And it is. And at some point, we've got to be a little uncomfortable because it's in that uncomfortableness that the wind of God can blow in and say, hey, good news, I'm a redeemer, I'm a restorer, I put things back together again. I'm more powerful than whatever negative things have ever happened to you. I'm bigger than that. And that's what happened to us, to God in Christ. So before we get to back to our dads on this planet, I want you to see something that happened because of the work of Jesus on the cross. 1 John chapter 3, verse 1. It says, "See how great the love the Father has bestowed upon us." And there's something that's going to happen in our midst today, and that's going from not seeing to seeing. From I'm not really getting it to getting it. Look at verse 1. It says, "See how great the love of the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called children of God." And then a little phrase after that, "and such we are." That's how simple it is. Not some big theology to where I have to tell you what the Greek meaning of it is. It's just right there, right there. God has loved you so much that He just poured out the love of you, and the result of that is this, that we would be called the children of God. And why should you be called the children of God? Because you are the children of God. And we forget that sometimes. You are the children of God. And don't ever forget that, because the enemy wants you to. There's nothing in your events calendar that's going to ever top that statement or one-up it. That's the crowning statement of your life. There's nothing coming. There's no moment. There's no phrase that's going to stand up on that one. There's no promotions you'll ever get to make you a millionaire. No marriage that you'll enter into to give you an outstanding, upstanding social name. No status you'll ever reach that will ever surpass being called a child of God. And if you read on, it goes to say the reason the world does not know us because it did not know Him. In other words, there's a little price to be paid for being one of the children of God, and that's that people start looking at you kind of funny. Verse 2, "Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we will be." In other words, there's even more coming. That's pretty cool, because we're not even sure how good this thing is going to get. But we do know this, that when He does appear, we will be like Him and we will see Him for as He is in all of His goodness. Verse 3, "And everyone who has this hope, has his hope on Him, purifies himself just as He is pure." So that's where we're at today. And from there, I want to work backwards and look at the repairing and restoring process if necessary. Do you know what the very last verse in the Old Testament reads? Have you ever checked it out? Look at Malachi. Skip back to Malachi chapter 4 of the Old Testament. You know how the old story ended? Where we're going into 400 years of silence before the New Testament begins from the Old Testament. And so in between the Old Testament and New Testament, the very last thing God is saying through the prophet Malachi will last for over 400 years. Talk about a father's words hanging in the air. And this is what's going to happen for 400 years. Pretty interesting. Down to the very end, it says in verse 6 of Malachi chapter 4. Keep your bookmarks there. Hold your fingers there in Malachi, because we're going to zoom to Luke, but we're going to go back to Malachi. In verse 6 it reads, he's talking about the future prophet that's coming. "Will restore the hearts of the fathers to their children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, so that I will not come and smite the land with a curse." And then the Old Testament ends. And here's God's plan. I want the fathers' hearts to be turned toward their kids. And I want the kids' hearts to be turned toward their dads. I want to do some repairing and some restoring. So then the New Testament rolls around. And in Luke chapter 1, look what happens. We're getting here the story from John the Baptist, who's going to be the forerunner of Jesus Christ. So he just skipped over 400 years of silence, and here's what happens, talking about John the Baptist in Luke chapter 1, verse 17. "It is he who will go on before the Lord Jesus, in the spirit and power of Elijah." Okay, now, skip back over to Malachi 4. Where we were just at. Now, we read verse 6. Now, read the verse just above verse 6. And it says, "Behold, I am going to send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord." All of a sudden, here comes John the Baptist, and guess what? He's going to go before the people with the spirit and power of Elijah. Okay, so now we see a connection that has been made 400 years from what God said would happen, and now what God is doing. And what's John the Baptist going to do? The last part of Luke chapter 1, verse 17 reads this: "To turn the hearts of the fathers to their children, and the disobedient to the attitude of wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." So see, it's not unlike God to be interested in restoring fatherhood in your heart and in my heart. If you're a father and you've got some messed up stuff between you and your kid, guess what? God likes that space. And He can repair and He can restore it. And if you're a kid who's got some messed up stuff between you and your dad, God likes that space because He can repair it and restore it. I wish I could name them all, but there's at least five kinds of fathers that all of us have been dealing with in life. And I just want to touch on them quickly before I come to a close. The first one I'll go with first is the empowering dad. How many of you think you have an empowering dad? Yeah. Some of you have had some good dads around, and I don't want to make it sound today like there's not any. There's a lot of good dads around. The empowering dad is the one who's telling you that he loves you. Now, granted, he's got his flaws. He's still thinking that wearing loafers and black socks to the mall is a good idea. So, you know, it's not like he's the total whole package. But he's been telling you that you're loved. And he was there to discipline you, because that's what empowering fathers do. He wasn't one of those that said, "You know, it's easier for me just to ignore it and not get involved." But he was the first one you could call when you failed. You know, you've got a dad when he's the first one when you think about calling, and when you've messed up, when you really messed up. And you know you're on pretty good turf right now and right there and then. And you know you're the number one son or daughter, even though there's three other siblings in the family who each think they're the number one child. You know, he loves you more than your brothers and sisters, but yet your brothers and sister knows that he loves them as well. He's figured out a way to convince everybody in the entire household that he loves them more than the other, and they're happy with it. And he set you up to succeed. He didn't cripple you in some kind of weird, twisted way and hope that you would fail, making him look better. And he set you up to succeed. And that's an empowering dad. Then there's the abusive father. There's verbal abuse. With that is physical abuse, emotional damage, incredible wounds, the kind of leaves you not knowing where you stand. And in every case, the child's first response is, "There must be something wrong with me." Because kids who have abusive dads at age 2 and age 3 and 7, at age 9 years old, they don't go, "Man, my dad's really jacked up." They go, "There must be something really, really wrong with me." And an abusive dad leaves in their wake a lot of weakened self-esteem and eroded trust. And some of you today, to this day, don't trust men. Any man, not completely. And all of that is the fruit of a broken relationship with an abusive father. And next, there's the absent father. He can be either absent by death, he can be absent by divorce or separation or busyness, or maybe he was just gone even before you were born. And you didn't really even know him. And what happens to kids whose dads are absent is they're really unsure of who they are and where they fit at in this world. They're insecure and they're easily blown this way or that way, and they really don't seem to be rooted and grounded in life. They didn't, in some case, even know his name. And the fourth father is the passive father. Now, he's here the whole time, but he just can't pull it together. He tries to step up and say, "Hey, everybody, I'm Dad, and I know we all love Mom, but Mom's not Dad. Dad's Dad. And Dad's going to lead our family, and he's going to take the reins, and Dad's going to be responsible, and Dad's going to make some decisions, and Dad's going to be the rock for everybody here. You'll see me, you'll hear from me, I'm going to be around, and I'm going to be who I'm supposed to be." But he just never seems to step up and do just that. A lot of you grew up where your mom wore the pants in your family, and your dad was in boxer shorts most of the time as a result of that. And in some cases, you didn't know what to do. A lot of younger boys were thinking, maybe, "Well, I'm supposed to step up and be the dad, and because we need one, and maybe I should do that." And in most cases, mom's the hero, and dad's passive, or maybe mom was awful, and that's why dad is passive. Maybe she beat him into submission and then put the pants on and ran the ship, and he really didn't know what to do. And certainly he wasn't going to speak up about it. So that was just kind of how the way it was in that family. But what happens is, in the moment, is that kids never know what a dad's supposed to do. And what can happen is, especially boys in the family, don't know what they're supposed to do. And everybody kind of leaves not sure what a godly man really looks like. But God is gracious, and He usually brings around some godly men. And in those moments, people start saying, "Well, there's a guy that's a guy. Or there's a dad that's a dad. And there's somebody like actually leading his family. There's a coach maybe spoken into my life, or a teacher that I really respected. Or there's a pastor that I loved, or somebody came along in our youth group and really poured themselves out in my life." And we start gravitating toward that, but it's still kind of just jumbled up inside. And the last of these five fathers is the performance-based father. Does anybody know about the performance-based dad? Oh, he'd tell you he loved you all right, if you earned it. He'd give you a hug if you deserved it. And with this dad, you always know where you stand. You'll always know if you're a B+, bordering on an A, or a D-, just hanging on and bordering on a full D. You always know what the score is, and you always know what's going on. You always know how heavy you can walk and where your boundaries are, what words you can say, what words you can't say, and where you can't step, and what you can do and what you can't do. You always know He's watching you. And He's been telling you verbally or non-verbally since the very beginning, if you jump through the hoops, then you'll get the embrace. And if you do the dance, you get accepted. And so what Dad sets out to do then, and gives you the blessing once you do those. And some of you have been dancing like maniacs your whole life. But the sad thing is, there's never ever a moment where you stand on the podium and you get this trophy thing and the flowers and the anthem plays in the background. And you know that you finally jumped enough hoops to make it. And those people, you know what those people do? They're the ones out there running you off the road on the highway. They're the ones taking your job, and they're the ones who's out there who are decided and driven and determined that they're going to do more and accomplish more and do that. And they're going to make it to the top. They're going to make a way for themselves. They're the ones telling you, "I don't need anybody. I don't need any assistance. I don't need anything. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get there." And God, guess what? Here's the money. Here's a little service. And what kind of hoops do I have to jump through you and for you? And they think God is sitting up there in heaven saying, hey, yes, of course I love you. And of course I'll give you the blessing, my child, if you jump through enough hoops. But you have to go through the hoop first to get the blessing. And there's the kind of people with a theology somewhere that goes something like, God helps those who help themselves. And the truth be known, though, none of us really have a prototype empowering dad, or none of us have a prototype abusive dad, or a prototype absent dad, or a prototype passive father, or a prototype performance-based dad. Most of us kind of have a hybrid of all of those, a little bit here and a little bit there. Maybe none of that, maybe some of this, maybe two out of three, maybe four or five or whatever. We got something rolled all together into something like we don't know what we've got. Good news, I love him, I can't get enough of him. Some of us are like that, have a prototype dad like that. And others for us is, if, man, he drives me crazy. I don't want to even be around him, whatever the circumstance. I don't even want to know him. But here's the reality this morning. And here's the beauty of the gospel. The gospel is this, that it doesn't matter how good your dad is or how bad he is. Some of you are sitting there thinking, hey, my dad, let me get up there, Eric. Let me get up there where you're standing. I'm going to tell you how good my dad. My dad was awesome. You make it sound like all dads are bad. And I don't want to do that today. I'm believing that I know all dads aren't bad. There's some really, really good dads out there. We have a lot of good dads in our church. And there's a lot of good dads around in our community. A lot of good dads are even absolutely Ward Cleaver good from the old show Leave It to Beaver. Some of those you know here, old dads, know who I'm talking about. They're at the top of the pecking order. They're absolutely amazing. But I don't care how good your dad is, I still don't want him to be my God, and you don't either. You don't want a God with sleep apnea. You don't want a God that makes strange gas noises while acting nothing like nothing happened around you, or like he doesn't hear anything. You just don't want that. So here's the point, and the beauty is that God's saying here that he's the reflection. God is not saying that he's the reflection of your earthly dad. You see, that's what the enemy wants to make happen. He wants you to think God as the father that you know what a father's like. And you know what fathers are all about. But the truth is, it's more different and radical and beautiful than anything you've imagined. And here's the point, that God is not the reflection of our earthly fathers. He's the perfection of our earthly fathers. He's not just a bigger version of your dad. He's the perfect version of your dad and what he can be. He's your dad if your dad was completely perfect. And so when the enemy comes and says, hey, you can't trust God because remember what your dad did to you. Or he broke your heart. He broke your trust. And sooner or later, God's going to do that to you too. No, he's not. Because he's just a bigger version of my dad here on earth. And he's the perfect version of my dad here on earth. And he's everything I ever dreamed of in my heart that my daddy would be more, and a million times more than that. That's who he is. And I am his loved son. And you are his loved son. And you are his loved daughter. Because Jesus told us in Matthew 7, you don't have to turn there, but as fatherhood comes through, and this is the beauty of what we're talking about, what's really amplified here in the moment. In Matthew 7:7-11, it says, and if ask and it will be given to you, seek and you shall find, knock and the door shall be opened for you. For everyone who knocks opens and the door shall be opened. For what man is among you who asks his son for a loaf and will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he not give him a snake, will he? And in verse 11 it says, if you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will the Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask Him. So the point here is not what we ask Him, and not when will we get it. The point is who He is. Not a reflection of our earthly dad, but the perfection of our earthly dad. Well, you say, well, you know, I really don't know how to relate to God as a father. I've got so many issues with my dad that you don't even get me started about stuff with my dad. I don't even know how to relate to God as a father. And I say, yes, you do. Because you know what you want from your father. And you start projecting what you want from him. And as you read the Word of God about who he is, about his character, and about what he is like, about how he interacts with your life, you start realizing that all that you want, he is. And so you start acting like and responding like how you want your dad really to be. And guess what? He'll respond back to you. Because he really is like that. Because he's a perfect father. Everything he says is true. He'll never, ever say anything to you that you'll find out later that wasn't true. Everything he does is right. I mean, really right. Because he's not like, yes, sir, dad, right. He's really right. Because, you see, he was the first father. He's not messed up with any father issues because he doesn't have one. He's the father of fathers. He doesn't want to shipwreck your life because he pays close enough attention to you so that you don't have to shipwreck it again to get his attention. He's already looking so you don't have to drive off the road in the woods, off your car in a ditch in order to get dad to come down to a hospital to see you. He's already there with you. And through Jesus Christ, the Son of God, what He did on the cross, through His resurrection from the dead, what He made possible for you and me is to have this divine relationship with God through a spiritual birth, whereby we are called children of God. And I hope that you go away today knowing that what you long for is yours, and that what you have, like rain, is a father's blessing that pours down on you. Because dads are going to be dads, in which they do mess up things here, maybe in your life, but they're the best thing we have on this planet right now. And that's so important that you don't let those traits become a reflection of who your father is in heaven. Because the father in heaven, reflection upon you, is perfection. And if things has happened in your life regarding your father which kind of distorts your image when you look in the mirror, through forgiveness you can wipe that mirror off knowing that your reflection doesn't have to be twisted or cloudy. And by the simple act of wiping the mirror away through forgiveness, you can soon be able to see the bigger picture of what your Father in heaven has in store from you. And then you will be able to see a father's reflection. This morning I would like to ask for the intercessor fathers to come to the front, please. If you're an intercessor today, I'd like you to come up here as a father. Today I would like to ask you to enlarge your picture of your father. Really realize that he's not necessarily the image that you have of God, but God really wants to perfect an image through him to you. And today I've asked some of the fathers in our church to come up, to stand as an intercessor for you. If you would like to perhaps make amends to your father, or just would like to pray with one of these men about your father, or if you're unable to see your father, and maybe he's passed, or that you don't have contact with him, just to appreciate him. You may just want to give him a hug. These men aren't here as a substitute for what you may need to do with your father. They're just an intercessor. They're just standing here before God and you. So at this time, we're going to allow you a little time to do that. Everybody, please stand with me. And if you'd like to be ministered to about your father, come on up here and just talk to one of these fathers or pray with them or just give them a hug. They're here for you because they love you. Fathers out there would like to come up and pray with your families. That's more than welcome too. But let's make this Father's Day a joyful day. I mean, we already got a candy bar, so we're already on our road to joy. Maybe there's money in it, maybe there's not. I don't know. But we got a candy bar, so we're on our road to goodness. But as you go away today, I know we're all busy, but try to think a little bit about your dad today in some way. Whether you just need to get away just for a brief moment or two and to reflect on some of the things maybe that you remember about him or that he's taught you, because dads are really special. Some of them more special than others.